Now let's read from Matthew 7, 1-5. Judge not that ye be not judged, for with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye mete, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, Let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then thou shalt see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. Give not that which is holy unto dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet, and turn again and rend you. Ask, and it shall be given to you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. Maybe seated.
If I were to ask you, how many of you that are here this morning are blind, or how many of you are partially blind, I doubt that very many of you would raise your hands. And perhaps that is partially due to the fact that most of us are blind to the fact that we are partially blind. Physically speaking, as we look at the function of your eye, each one of us has a blind spot in each of our eyes. God so designed us that we have two eyes, and the one eye covers for the other, so normally we do not notice that. If this would be a smaller group, I would help you to find your blind spot this morning, but that may not be practical with a group of this size. But the reason that occurs is because as light enters your physical eye, it forms an image on the retina, which is in the back of your eyeball, and then this image is transferred to the brain through the optic nerve. And the point where the optic nerve connects with the retina, there's a small area there where that image does not register. Now, God designed it so that that spot is not directly in front of us, but for each eye, it's just off to the side just a bit, and the eyes cover for each other. So we normally do not notice that. But physically speaking, we really do have blind spots in our eyes. What about spiritually speaking? Or as we look at other aspects of our life, our character, do you think that there may be some other areas of your own life that you have trouble seeing? Some other areas that may not register, that we tend to overlook? We could refer to those areas as blind spots as well. And this morning for the message, I'd like to look at dealing with blind spots. The title of the message is Open My Eyes, Lord. I'd like to look at address several questions in this message. First of all, how can I identify my blind spots? Secondly, how can I eliminate blind spots? After I identify them, how can I eliminate them? And then the third portion of the message would be, where do I go from here? How can I respond? What can I do as we move forward? So the first part of the message, how can I identify my blind spots? Several different ways that to help us to identify blind spots in our own lives. First of all, I need to consider my character if I'm looking for a blind spot in my life. You see, if I look at my physical characteristics, it's usually not too hard for me to know where my areas of weaknesses are. I have a pretty good idea what I can do and what I cannot do, physically speaking. I know if I'm a good seamstress or not. I have a friend who made a dress for his wife as a gift. Now, I never attempted to make a dress for my wife. I'd hate to put her into such a predicament. She wouldn't know what to do with it once she had it. It's not hard for me to know if I'm a good seamstress or not. That's a physical characteristic. It's not hard for me to know if I'm a good athlete or not. Or sometimes I might make an excuse for how I play and pretend that I'm better than I am, and claim that I would have scored that point if it would not have been for a certain circumstance. But normally the scoreboard does not lie, and we know if we're good or not, if we are willing to admit it. It's not hard for me to know if I'm a good mechanic or not. My lack of mechanical ability is not a blind spot in my life. I know that if I would dig very deep into an engine, I'd soon get myself into trouble because I wouldn't know where to go next. You see, these are physical characteristics, and it's pretty easy to put a finger on my areas of weakness or my areas of strength. But when it comes to my character, it's a little bit harder to identify. So if I'm looking for a blind spot in my life, I need to consider my character, because character issues are a little more difficult to measure. Because, first of all, it's easier to deceive myself into thinking that maybe I'm a better person than I really am. And it's also easier to hide things from others when it pertains to my character. And sometimes character issues can only be discerned by God because I deceive myself. Proverbs 16, verse 2 says, "All the ways of a man are clean in his own eyes, but the Lord weigheth the spirits." In the NIV, it says, "All a person's ways seem pure to them, but motives are weighed by the Lord." You see, I can defend myself, I can rationalize, I can portray myself as having a pretty good character. But the Lord looks through what I portray. He sees my motives, he sees my spirit, he sees the character behind that. And that can be a little bit difficult for me to discern. You know, there's so many areas of my character in which I can have a problem and barely be aware of it. I might have a problem with dishonesty. I may have an unloving attitude. I may be hypocritical, insincere, unmerciful, ungrateful, selfish, unforgiving, disobedient, or proud, and really be blind to that fact. I think it was C.S. Lewis who made the statement, "When a man walks in pride, he is always looking down on others and therefore never sees anything above himself." I thought that was pretty interesting. Because of his focus, he never sees anything above himself, so he thinks he is the top. He is blind to the fact of what's above him and that he actually may be close to the bottom. So if you're looking for blind spots in your life, first of all, consider your character. That's a good place to start. Now, another area in which we can look, consider what irritates me in other people, because often that's a window into my own life, and it may be a window into a blind spot in my life. It's almost frightening how often I notice something I don't appreciate in another person, and then I realize how much that person is just like me, and I'm actually looking at a reflection of myself. So often that's the case. Someone once said that the people who think they know everything are really annoying to those of us who do. You see, that was a blind spot in his life. The other people who think they know everything bothered him, but obviously he thought he did himself. Or we've all heard of the person who said, "Haven't I told you at least a million times to stop exaggerating?" And in doing so, he was exaggerating himself. See, what irritated him and someone else was a window into his own life. So if we're looking for a blind spot in our life, maybe I should think about what irritates me in other people. And you know, this can be an especially good indication for those of us who are parents. Just recently, my wife and I were talking, and I told her, I said, "You know, sometimes I wish my children would not be so much like I am. Because I see some of my weaknesses, and I see how that can pass on to other people. And I recognize their weaknesses as my own weaknesses." And you know, sometimes we may see a deficiency in other people that we are especially harsh with, because we have that own weakness and we are trying to prevent that weakness in other people, but I become disturbed when I see it in them. So if you're looking for a way to discover your blind spots, consider your character, consider what irritates you and others, number two. But something else you can consider is your areas of strength. Simon Schrock wrote a small booklet just fairly recently, 2 years ago or so, and the title of it is Your Strength Can Become Your Weakness. And his point in that little booklet was that every area of strength has an accompanying area of weakness. And if we're strong in a certain area, there's probably a related area in which we have a weakness. For example, someone who is highly organized, has everything organized to the T, may struggle with impatience with people who do not. Someone who is merciful may have a weakness of overlooking sin in others' lives. You see, mercifulness is a strong point, but related to that is a weak point, which can be a blind spot. He does not recognize the sin or deal with sin in other people's life. On the other hand, someone who has a clear sense of right and wrong, who sees everything black and white, may struggle with feeling merciful to other people who are struggling in some of those areas. Someone who is generous, just loves to share, loves to give, may struggle in the area of accountability. Doesn't really matter what happens to it as long as I can share. So your areas of strength can be an indication as to what your weakness is or a blind spot in your life. So think about your areas of strength and then consider the opposing characteristic that could be a blind spot in your life. And fourthly, consider the difference between action and intention. And this can very easily be an indication of a blind spot. You see, our tendency as humans is to judge other people by their actions, by what they do, while I judge myself by my intention, by what I intend to do, or what I wish to do. You see, if someone else comes up short in any given area, I hold him accountable. But if I come up short in that same area, I tend to be blind to that because I judge myself by what I intended to do. For an example, suppose I go to a committee meeting and one of the committee members shows up 10 minutes late and I get upset with him. This is not right. This man needs to learn to plan ahead. He needs to learn to be in control of his schedule. Six of us waited 10 minutes. That means he lost an hour of our time. He is totally inconsiderate of other people. You see, I judge him by his actions, by what he did. But 2 weeks later, I go to a meeting, and I show up late. Now, how do I judge myself? As I pull into the driveway, I'm thinking, you know, maybe my tardiness will help these people understand how busy I really am and how important my time is. And as I walk in the door and someone makes a comment about me being late, I think, well, you just don't understand. You don't have half the challenges in life I do. If you'd be in my situation, you would be late too. Or may say, I intended to be here, but I was interrupted. It really wasn't my fault. You see, I'm judging myself by my intentions while I judge other people by their actions. And that can be a blind spot in my life. So that's just a couple pointers in how we can identify the blind spots in our life. Let's move on now to the second part. How can I eliminate blind spots in my life? Now, I'd like to make some comparison here again between the physical blind spots in our physical eyes and then draw some comparisons to that to eliminating the figurative blind spots in our lives. So what can I do to eliminate a blind spot in my life? If you would have only one eye this morning, the eye that remains has a blind spot. There's an area just off to the side in which you cannot see. So if you're looking straight ahead and you have this little blind spot off to the side, all you need to do is look over in this direction, and then the blind spot moves off further. So what you need to do is simply change your focus. When you change your focus, it moves your blind spot farther off to the side. So how can I eliminate blind spots in my life? I need to change my focus. Sometimes in my life, my focus gets so zeroed in on a certain thing to the point that I become oblivious to everything else that's happening around us. I don't know where your focus is. Probably each one of us can think of things that tend to draw our attention, our focus. Maybe our focus becomes fixed on our business, and we neglect our family. We neglect our relationship with God. We neglect our responsibilities to the church because we're just so zeroed in on this one thing, bringing our business to success. And sometimes we just simply need to move our focus off to that so that we can recognize that we do have a family that needs our attention. We do have a relationship with God that needs our attention. Maybe our focus becomes fixed on sports. After all, it's football season. The World Series is coming up, and it's hunting season. I don't have too much time for anything else. Once you consider all three of those, what happens to our homework? It suffers. What happens to the honey-do list that your wife prepares for you men? It just grows longer and longer while our focus is zeroed in on something and we become oblivious to these other things. Our focus may become fixed on social media to the point where we ignore the friends that are sitting right next to us, and we're in a world some distance away, and the needs around us just fade from focus. When this happens, we need a change of focus, because it is so possible to become zeroed in on one point that we forget those things around us. I'd like to look at an example, an illustration from 2 Kings chapter 6. And you may turn to that passage if you care to. There's a very interesting account here. And there was a man, a young man, I assume, a servant, whose focus was so concentrated on one thing that was not even aware of the realities around him. And in this passage, 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 8, the king of Syria was at war against the king of Israel. And the king of Syria would make his plans. I'm going to go and hide out in a certain place, and I'm going to wait until the Israelites pass by there, and we're going to attack them. But whenever he got there, the Israelites never came by. And this happened time and time again. And finally, he said to one of his men, he said, "Somebody's a traitor. Somebody's going to the Israelites and telling them everything I plan to do because they're always one step ahead of me. What's going on here?" And one of his servants told him what was happening. He said, "There's a man in Israel, a man of God." He's referring to Elisha. He says, "He knows everything you talk about in your bedroom. He says, he knows what you're planning to do. It's not the fact that one of us is a traitor." And so this king of Syria said, "Go find out where he is, and we're going to go get him." And I have to think of the irony of this story. If Elisha knew everything he thought in his bedchamber, how did he think he was going to surprise Elisha? And if Elisha knew what he was going to do, Elisha was probably thinking, "This is going to be fun. Wonder what's going to, or just wait to see what comes out of this." So anyway, the king of Syria gathered his armies. He found out where Elisha was. He was in Dothan. And he went there at night, and he completely surrounded that village with his army. And they thought, "He's not going to get away this time." Meanwhile, I think Elisha was just sitting back, perhaps with a smile on his face, waiting for God to do his work. But Elisha's servant got awake that morning. He stepped outside the house, and it says, "Behold, a host compassed the city both with horses and chariots." That was all the servant could see. They were surrounded. They were in trouble. As far as he was concerned, there was no way out of this. He came running back into the house. "Alas, master, what shall we do?" You see, his focus was on the enemy. His focus was not on God. And Elisha just calmly says, don't worry about that. There's more with us than there are with them. The servant, you didn't see what I saw. We are surrounded. I mean, there's just two of us. How can you say there's more with us? And finally, Elisha just prays, God, open his eyes that he can see. You see, this servant needed a change of focus. He needed to take his eye off the enemy. He needed to focus on God so that he could see. It says, the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire around Elisha. God's army was greater. What a beautiful reality. He needed to change his focus. I think of the little chorus that we used to sing sometimes. It says, turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full on his wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. Consider where your focus is this morning. Isaiah 26, verse 3 says, thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. If you find yourself being overwhelmed by life, perhaps it's because your focus is too zeroed in on one thing and you need to look to Jesus. So how can you eliminate your blind spot? First of all, change your focus. Secondly, change your perspective. Now, going back to the physical example, if I have one eye and I'm looking ahead at a point here and I have a blind spot, if I would just move off to the side and look at it from a different perspective, what was in my blind spot would come into focus. I just simply need to look at it from a different perspective, and that reveals what I was missing before. In Mark chapter 6, we have an account where Jesus told his disciples, you need a different perspective on life. And this was a situation where John the Baptist had just been beheaded. The disciples were out in ministry, and then they heard the news that John the Baptist had been beheaded, which was very discouraging news for them. And in Mark chapter 6, verse 30, it says, the apostles gathered themselves together to Jesus and told him all things, what they had done, what was happening. And I can imagine this was a bit of an overwhelming time for the disciples. And you know what Jesus said unto them? He said, let's just get off to ourselves for a little bit. Come ye apart into a desert place and rest a while. You need a different perspective on life. Let's just go take a break, get yourselves refreshed, and then we'll be ready to continue our ministry. You know, this principle of a different perspective is something that God built into creation. He built it, he designed us that we need a different perspective. He created day and night. Every 24-hour period, we have a daytime and a nighttime. How many of you have felt overwhelmed in the evening? You go to bed just feeling overwhelmed, and you wake up, and you're refreshed, and you're ready to try again. You're ready to take on the challenge. You have a new strength because it's a new day, a new source of perspective. We have the seasons, spring, summer, fall, and winter. And sometimes we might find one season overwhelming. We get exhausted in the heat and the dryness of summer. And then comes autumn, where we reap the rewards of our labors. We harvest from the efforts. Or we become depressed in the bleakness of wintertime. And then comes spring with its new life and new growth. See, God designed this to give us a new perspective. We have it on a weekly basis with a weekly day of rest to just renew our perspective. God says you need a new perspective. So how can I eliminate my blind spots? Just take a new perspective. Just move yourself apart and rest in God. We may need to change our focus. We may need to change our perspective. But there's a third way in which we can eliminate a blind spot. And perhaps it's the most obvious of all. If I have one eye and there's a blind spot in my life, the best way to eliminate that blind spot is simply to open my other eye. Because God designed us that what one eye misses, the other eye will catch. And if you're looking at eliminating the blind spots in your life, recognize the need for a second eye, a second person, the perspective of another person. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9 says, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. Where the one has a weakness, the other has a strength, and they mesh with each other. In 2 Samuel chapter 11 and 12, we have an example of someone that had a blind spot. Now, it doesn't actually say he had a blind spot, but the account illustrates it. The man was David. And David was blind to some very glaring weaknesses, faults, sins in his own life. He was blind to the fact that he had committed adultery. He was blind to the fact that he had committed murder. He was blind to the fact that he was a dishonest person. He seemed to think that he could get away with it. He seemed to think that no one's ever going to know the difference. But the scripture says, the thing that he did displeased the Lord. You see, God does not have blind spots. God is not blind. God sees every aspect of your life. And he sees your blind spots, and your blind spots may be displeasing to the Lord. What do you need in a case like this? You need a second eye. God sent Nathan as a second eye to David. So Nathan came, he met up with David, and David, I can imagine, feeling pretty smug and proper in concealing what he thought was a blind spot, or what he thought no one saw in his life. And Nathan told this story about this rich, wealthy man, flocks of sheep. I can imagine he had hundreds of them. And he had a visitor come one night, and he wanted to prepare a meal for him, but he looked over his flocks. I hate to give up one of my lambs. He had a neighbor nearby, had one little lamb. He was a poor man. This little lamb, the family raised it. It was their pet. He said, that man's poor anyway. I'll just take that lamb. It'll hardly make any difference to him. And he went and he took that lamb and he killed it and he served it to his guests. He told this story to David, and David became furious. He said, that is not right. That man needs to die for what he did. You see, what was a fault in his own life was glaringly obvious when it was someone else. David needed to consider what irritated him in the life of someone else. David was irritated. And not only was he irritated, he tried to correct this in this other person's life. He said, that man needs to die. He needs to repay that lamb fourfold. He had a response to this crime. But there was still a problem. He still had that blind spot in his own life. He still couldn't see his own glaring fault. He was still looking at his own life with just one eye. And he needed the second eye. He needed that man, Nathan, to tell him what he was missing. That's why God sent Nathan. And Nathan looked at David. I can imagine him looking straight in his eye. And he said, David, you are the man. You are the man. Suddenly, David had two eyes. What was his response? I have sinned. And I think for the first time, David saw clearly exactly what he had done. You know, sometimes God brings people into our lives that we may not appreciate. They show us things that we don't want to see. They show us things that we try to keep hidden. And it hurts. But we need to thank God for those people. We need to thank him for bringing them into our lives. They're as valuable to us as our two eyes are. And God does not bring them into our lives to bring us conflict. He brings them into our lives to bring us completion. Not to bring death, but to bring life. In fact, Nathan told David, God is going to deliver you. You will not die because of this. You will have life. And that's why God wants to reveal our blind spots, to bring us life. So how can I eliminate my blind spots, change my focus, change my perspective, and recognize the value of a second life, a second eye? We need people in our lives who are willing and who love us enough to tell us the areas that we cannot see. Let's move on to the third question. Where do I go from here? And I'd like you to open your Bibles to Mark chapter 8. And I'm going to be looking at an account here also from the life of Jesus for the final portion of the message to make this practical for ourselves. How do I respond? What do I do from here? In Mark chapter 8, the disciples had a blind spot. Jesus was teaching them a lesson, a spiritual lesson, and they weren't getting it. They were blind to what he was teaching because all they could think of was the physical. Kind of like us. We see the physical. We see the dollar bills. We see our job. We see our business. We see our attractions. And we miss out on the spiritual. Mark chapter 8, verse 11. The Pharisees came forth, began to question with him, with Jesus, seeking of him a sign from heaven, tempting him. They were looking for Jesus, and Jesus was grieved. He was grieved at their blindness. See, these Pharisees were blind to who Jesus really was. Jesus was grieved. In verse 12, he sighed deeply in his spirit. Why doth this generation seek after a sign? And he left them. He just turned and he left. He was grieved at their blindness. And then he looks to his disciples and he says to his disciples, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. And what he was saying to the disciples is, don't be as blind as they are. They're so blind to spiritual reality. Do not be so blind as they are. And he says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. And the disciples start thinking, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. Ah, we forgot to bring bread along. He's reminding us that we didn't bring bread along. And Jesus starts talking to the disciples. He says, bread? You're worried about bread? You saw me feed 5,000 people with five loaves, and you yourselves gathered 12 baskets full of leftovers. You saw me feed 4,000 people with seven loaves, and you yourselves gathered seven baskets of leftovers, and you're worried about bread? How blind can you get? You're as blind as the Pharisees. And in verse 18, Jesus, looking at the disciples, he says, having eyes, see ye not? Having ears, hear ye not? Not only are you blind, but you're deaf. You just don't get it. You have a problem with blind spots. What's the very next thing that Jesus did as we continue reading? Verse 22 to 26. Jesus healed a blind man. Why did Jesus heal that blind man? Well, I think he did it out of the compassion of his heart for that blind man, because that blind man had a need and Jesus wanted to meet that need. But I believe he was also teaching the disciples a lesson about their blind spots. Not only that, but in the previous chapter, he healed a deaf man. So he's talked to the disciples about being blind and deaf. I think he had a lesson for the disciples. And I think he has a lesson for us. What is Jesus teaching us? What can we learn about blind spots? Where do I go from here? What should I do? I'd like to look at several different aspects here. And the final point, as it pertains to blind spots in my life, in your life, first of all, we need to pray. The scriptures give numerous accounts of different people who Jesus healed of their blindness. The one man, Jesus came to him and said, what would you like me to do for you? And that man's cry was, Lord, that I might receive my sight. That was his prayer. Are you willing to pray that God would reveal your blind spots to you? Or are you determined to go on under the illusion that you have no blind spots? I think a very appropriate prayer. prayer for every one of us to pray is, Lord, help me to see myself as you see me. Remember, God has no blind spots. He sees every aspect of your life. And if you pray that God would help you to see yourself as God sees you, that's going to reveal the blind spots in your life. Now, just a side note here, it's interesting. This man himself did not ask to be healed of his blindness. He had some friends with him, and it was actually the friends who asked Jesus to touch this man, to heal him. So it never hurts to pray for others as well. That was the case here. But we need to pray. Pray that God would reveal the blind spot to our lives. Secondly, we need to be willing to take a detour. In verse 23, it says, Jesus took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the town. Now, why did he do that? They were in town. Some friends brought this blind man to him and asked Jesus to touch him. And instead, he just took him by the hand. Can you just picture Jesus in his compassion, reaching out, taking this man by the hand and gently leading him, walking with him down the road until they were out of town? Well, that wasn't what the blind man asked for. That wasn't what his friends asked for. Why was Jesus leading them away? He was taking them on a detour. Remember what I said we need to do to eliminate our blind spots? Sometimes we need to change our focus. Sometimes we need to change our perspective. Perhaps there was something in that town that was distracting. Perhaps there was something in that town that was keeping these people from focusing on Jesus. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Jesus led them away. He took them away, changed their focus, changed their perspective. Allow God to change your focus. Allow God to lead you away from the things that distract you so that he can do what he wants to do in your life. Be willing to take a detour. Thirdly, allow others to touch you. He led him out of the town, and when he had spit on his eyes, a very interesting thing to do, and put his hands upon him, he asked him if he saw aught. Remember I said we need a second eye. You know, this man could have resisted this close, intimate contact with Jesus. He could have buckled under that, but no, he was there. He allowed Jesus' personal touch on his life. And sometimes we resist other people's interaction in our lives. We're protective of our blind spots. We hug our blind spots like we're hugging a football. Protecting it. We don't want anyone to touch us. Allow people to come into our lives and say, you are the man. That's what this man did. He allowed others to touch him, to touch his life. Fourthly, recognize that change is a process. We like instant results. We like instant gratification. Verse 23, it says, he put his hands upon him and asked him if he saw aught, if he saw anything. And this blind man looked up and he said, I see men or trees. Men look like trees walking around. He saw something. It was pretty blurry. It wasn't very clear. After that, he put his hands again upon his eyes and made him look up. Now what do you see? And he was restored and saw everything clearly. It wasn't instant. It was a process. If you're asking God to work in your life, remember that it's a process. And I don't know why Jesus did not heal this man instantly. I find it interesting, this two-step process. We can speculate on that. We really don't know. Perhaps this man's faith was weak. Maybe he really did not believe that Jesus was going to heal him. And maybe Jesus just led him a step at a time. And as this man saw what God was doing, he allowed that to increase his faith for even greater work. I don't know if that was Jesus' reason or not, but it is a challenge to me. When I don't see the results that I want, I still need to look for what God is doing. And as I see what he is doing, allow that to encourage my faith for him to work even more in my life. And to lead me in the way he wants me to be. Perhaps you've seen a poster with a little phrase on it that said, "All I have seen teaches me to trust the Creator for all that I have not seen." God doesn't reveal everything we want to see instantly in every case, but he gives us enough so that we can respond to that and we can trust him for the next step. Allow the small blessings in your life to nurture your faith and use them as stepping stones for greater faith to increase your walk with God. Recognize that change is a process. Now, we talked about in verse 22 about why did Jesus lead this man out of Bethsaida. Verse 26 is also interesting. It says, he sent him, after he could see clearly, he sent him away to his house, saying, "Neither go into town." Obviously, this man did not live in Bethsaida. He lived somewhere else. He must have been visiting Bethsaida. And what Jesus said, "I want you to go to your home. I don't want you to go back to this town, nor do I want you to even tell anybody in this town what happened to you today." Now, he did not say, "You may not tell people in your own town. You may not tell your own family." He just said, "Do not tell any people in this town." Remember, this may be your last opportunity. What do we know about Bethsaida? This city had been judged for its unbelief. If you read in Matthew chapter 11, I think Luke records it as well, Jesus said, pronounced a curse on this town. "Woe unto you, Bethsaida, for if the mighty works which were done in you had been done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes." God had done mighty works in and near this town. The feeding of the 5,000, I believe, was close to this town. But this town was not responding to Jesus' teaching. They were not responding to who he was. And Jesus was now moving his focus onto other people. We need to recognize that when God gives you an opportunity to respond, when God gives you an opportunity to reveal your blind spots, we need to respond to that while we have the opportunity. Because that opportunity will not always be there. And a time will come when God's mercy will be focused on other people. I think what Jesus was telling this man, don't even go back and tell these people what happened. Go tell people that are willing to listen. Go tell people that are willing to believe. Focus on the people that will respond. As for the town of Bethsaida, they had their opportunity. Today, you have your opportunity. You need to respond while you have the opportunity. And the last aspect here, do not allow the blindness of the crowds to limit your vision. When this blind man was in Bethsaida, he was in a setting where people were not responding to Jesus. But he did not allow that to limit his response to Jesus. He was willing to be led to be led out of that setting. He was willing to allow Jesus to respond, to touch his life. It appeared that Jesus was finished with that town. However, Jesus was still willing to respond to the faith of individuals. And as we look at our society today, sometimes we ask, how far can this society go? What's going to happen next? But never forget, Jesus is willing to respond to the faith of individuals. Do not be bogged down by the society around you. Jesus is willing to reach out to you, to touch you, to give you sight. Jesus is waiting for your response. Are you willing to step out from the crowd? Are you willing to allow him to touch your life? Are you willing to be different from those around you? So where do I go from here? Pray for vision. Pray that God would restore your vision. Be willing to follow the path that God leads you. Take a detour from what your focus was fixed upon. Allow others to touch your life. Recognize that change is a process and continue to walk with God through that process. Remember, today is a day of opportunity. It could be your last. And do not be limited by the faithlessness of others. around you. When I was in sixth grade, I got glasses for the first time. Somehow we determined that I needed glasses. I didn't realize that I needed glasses. I could see. Somebody told me I needed glasses. So I went to the eye doctor. I had an examination. He fit me up with glasses. And we came home. And at that time, we lived on a hill, and down over the hill in front of our house, several hundred yards away, there was a small patch of woods. And I remember sitting in the house looking down at that woods and making the comment, I believe I can see every branch on every tree in that woods. You see, before, that woods was just a blur. I had no idea what I was missing. But for the first time, I was able to see clearly. It gave me a whole new perspective in life. That's what God wants to do. He wants to give you a new perspective. Allow him to work his will in your life. We would like to close with prayer, and we kneel for prayer, and we invite you, if you care to join us as we kneel together.